off top, the highest rated Super Bowl ever, Super Bowl 49, the Malcolm Butler interception. Most watched.
Play music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. My good friend Charlie Kravitz is at home in D.C. with his stinky booty in my chair, which is unacceptable. At least he does not have my mug. And we are also joined by my friend and yours, name dropper extraordinaire, stat me down captain, Kevin Clark. What's up, buddy?
What's going on? I'm excited. There's so much NFL news, buddy.
Is there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had set up a rundown. We're going to do NFL exit interviews for the conference championship losers, the Lions and the Ravens. And wouldn't you know it, we got news that didn't blow up our rundown. It made our rundown better. The Lions, they're keeping offensive genius Ben Johnson, who was rumored to be going to the Commanders, and he was going to be a steward of my future beloved young quarterback, whether that's Jaden Daniels or Drake May. But the way I want to talk about these exit interviews, I want to break it down into three things. Coaching, and then QB and roster together, because they sort of go hand in hand, and the division and how that's going to break out for these teams moving forward. So let's start with the Lions. The Lions had a really tough loss to end the season, but Dan Campbell had some pretty interesting quotes. He said it's going to be twice as hard next year. This could be their only shot. The target's on their back. He was pretty direct about it. He was sort of the anti-Giannis Antetokounmpo talking about failure.
Leave Giannis.
No, it's not acceptable.
This NBA champion Giannis. Then he go for 50 off a hyperextended knee. Get off his back.
That's not what failure's okay.
You take it at shots at people with perspective. Also, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, he's out here being the kinder, gentler MJ. I mean, I know your type, Snack. You're the type who believes you got to be an to win. And you got to be angry. Nothing else matters more than winning. And Patrick Mahomes is disproving it. It's making you mad. And also, you really like Dan Campbell being crazy aggressive, man, because you think that it's consistent with the only way possible to win.
We're going to argue about this once we get to the Joel Embiid topic at the end of the show. Ooh. Until then, we're going to talk about football in a logical and practical manner.
Dumb word.
The snack does.
The snack does.
Well, Dominique is a Sour Patch Kid right now.
Let's sour then sweet. I'm about to sweeten y'all with this hot take that I'm going to give you. It's actually not a hot take. So I agree with Dan Campbell's position. And I think like his head coach was always head coach and understands that he is talking to his players. And yeah, there's no laurels to rest on. Their division is going to get tougher. So I will respect the Snacks construct. And you want to start with the Lions. I was saying I'm respecting your contract. Your construct. How is this? Dower, I'm sorry that you had to be here for Kevin, for this Kevin. I don't know what's gotten into the snack, why he's feeling insecure and
I'm
picking on me.
I'm the child of divorced parents. I know how to just sit back and just sort of let you guys work this out.
Talk about Dower. I'll play PlayStation. Man, now it's a sullen Kevin Clark, a Dower Dominique, and a giggly snack.
I'm not sullen.
You're sullen. You start talking about your divorced parents, it gets sad. It gets sad in here fast. Oh man.
Let's talk coaching.
We're off track.
Let's talk coaching because the Lions apparently have three elite coaches. Dan Campbell is a motivator. Yep. Ben Johnson is someone who's going to keep the offense intact, and Aaron Glenn, who has made the defense better after how bad they were at the start of the season.
I would call him a chicken salad maker, is what if you're going to call Dan Campbell the motivator and Ben Johnson the offensive guru. Aaron Glenn made chicken salad out of what he was offered this season. Once someone else has been interviewed, like there was a chance they could lose both their coordinators, which would be the Eagles experience. And the Ravens also could too, which we'll talk about later. But it seems that they're definitely going to be keeping Ben Johnson because you said that the Lions keeping him. No, he's keeping the Lions. He's decided that he didn't want to go to Washington because he's heard about Charlie's fandom. He doesn't want to be associated with that. Keeping the quarterback coach combination together is paramount, especially when you have a player like Jared Goff, who is probably the most sensitive player to coaching that we've seen. Like, if you remember, he was the worst quarterback we had ever seen drafted. What was that thing? Didn't he have like a Hard Knocks thing where he didn't understand? He said something about
where
like
the sun rises.
Oh, that's
where
right.
The sun rises.
Yeah. Then he went from that tomfoolery to being one of the better quarterbacks in football with Sean McVay, and then not so good. And now is back up there. Really productive, one of the best quarterbacks in the NFC, at least, with Ben Johnson. So I think that bodes well for their run back into the playoffs next year, presumably, if they don't give up the division to the Packers or Caleb and the Bears. What do you think, Kevin?
Are you ready for this?
No, I'm not. Hold on, let me put my seatbelt on. All right, I'm ready now.
So I was talking to Ben Johnson a couple years ago.
Oh, my gosh. Name drop. This is the quickest name drop in the history of the show. All right, go ahead.
He name dropped James Cook before the show.
No, I said we had technical difficulties with James Cook. It's becoming more and more like the you know how the SNL guys talk about how Lorne Michaels name drops, and they always joke about how like he was friends with all the serial killers, and like, oh, you know, John Wayne Gacy. Like, it's becoming now, you can do Mad Libs name drops for me, where it's like, oh, we just had real bad technical difficulties with James Cook. You can just do the Mad Libs for the name drops. Anyway, so for Ben Johnson, a couple things. Number one is, like, I think there was a cope that was going around the last couple of days, especially from NFC North teams, that were like, well, when the Lions lose Ben Johnson, Dan Campbell's going to be Mike Singletary. Get ready to learn 5-12, buddy. And that's not true, first of all. Dan Campbell had one of the best three-year builds in modern football. I mean, like, it's a very short list. Sean McVay is on the list. Kyle Shanahan's on the list. Bill Belichick is obviously on the list. To go from the Lions, and, like, the Lions had one playoff win in the modern in the Super Bowl era until Dan Campbell showed up. He's a special coach. The Ben Johnson thing, he developed Ben Johnson as a coach. They worked together in Miami. He empowered him, promoted him in Detroit. Ben Johnson told me, this is what I was alluding to it a second ago, is that the culture that Dan Campbell built is something that Ben wants to be a part of. And he says that Dan has built a culture where it's all love, no fear, and that now the expectation, and I've always heard, like, you rule through expectation, not fear, right? And that's how Dan Campbell does it. And the thing I've heard from Ben Johnson in that interview was that basically Dan Campbell doesn't have to yell because he loves Dan Campbell so much that he doesn't want to disappoint him. That's his motivation. And I think that there are very few working relationships better than head coach and coordinator. And I think that a lot of people were looking at this like it was like Kyle Shanahan working for Dan Quinn, just trying to get the next job. No, Ben Johnson loves being there. Now, the second part of this is it sounds like he asked for too much money, which I think is great because, Dominic, you know this, like, a lot of guys control where they're going by asking for too much money and saying, okay, Commanders, okay, Seahawks, if you want me, here's what I'll actually take. And it might be $15 million a year. For the Panthers, it might be even more because you don't want to go unless you get generational wealth off of it.
This is a quality name drop that sets us up to have a different conversation about options and about, I think it's about the culture that they have there and him not necessarily needing to leave it. And that sets him up for success, finding the job that he feels most comfortable with. And yeah, everyone has a price. I'll take your job if you're going to break me off in a way that I think is commiserate with the job that you're asking me to do.
I shouldn't blow a spot up, but I will. Shea Serrano
name drop
taught me this. No, he's a great guy.
But he's also a name drop.
In like 2016, we're having dinner.
What's the record?
It was when the Ringer had first started. And we were talking about how, you know, obviously the Grantland shuts down and he's got a bunch of options. And he was like, every time somebody would call, I would just ask for $1 million. And he's like, because I would do it. I would go to these places for $1 million. And he's like, you just create your own job. And I was like, you'd create your own dream job. I'm like, that's an amazing piece of advice. It's like, oh, they called me. How about $1 million? And like, I just always love that piece of advice. That's what Ben Johnson's doing, except instead of random media jobs, it's not going to the Seahawks.
Quality name drop, unnecessary name drop. You went from a really good name drop to useless name
drop. It's a great lesson. Kravitz is going to ask for $1 million next time someone calls him.
Where are you going?
Don't set the price that low.
We create a loving culture around here. No one wants to leave here. Snack, don't run away.
Can I ask a question, though, about the coordinator thing? Because we've seen these trendy coordinators turn down jobs before, like the Josh McDaniels of the world.
Yep.
And it doesn't always work. And
Byron,
I know,
Leftwich.
Yeah, Byron Leftwich. I mean, McDaniels is the worst example because now he's turned himself sort of into a joke after he turned down better opportunities and returned long enough to just expose himself as what he is. But my question is, was the Commander's job really that bad? Like, you have new ownership, you might have a new stadium, you have the second pick in the draft. It's not like the $15 million he asked for from Carolina, where you're going to have to coach Bryce Young and work for David Tepper.
I don't know if the Commanders job was that bad. I think there is some uncertainty to the Commanders job when there is a new owner. The expectation for a new owner, despite the fact that the owner has experience in the NBA, I think the expectation is there will be some growing pains, and there will be also some dabbling. And I think that's one of the things that's more frustrating than anything for a coach is how involved they're going to be. And it seems that the Washington has already settled on their general manager, which is another hurdle to climb if you're not comfortable with that general manager. If you're a coach with some amount of leverage or cachet, you see what Jim Harbaugh was able to do is you go there first and then you make the decisions about the things around you, because that's going to, no matter how great a coach you are, the talent acquisition process is going to have as much of an impact with, or more of an impact than anything you're going to have in the process. So yeah, I don't know whether saying it's a good job or a bad job matters, but having an amount of control, I think, does matter to somebody with as many choices as Ben Johnson.
I have a question, Dominique. So I'd always heard, a couple of people told me this, like there's position coaches who don't want to be coordinators because they're like, you know what? Making mid six figures, my kids are in school and nobody's making fun of them because of the play calls. I got job security. If somebody comes, you know, the next head coach, I'm a great tight ends coach or I'm a great linebackers coach. I got a job for life. Is there a type of person? I actually once heard Vic Fangio was a little bit like this, and then he ended up later in life taking the Broncos job. But is there a type of guy who's just like, you know what? I like coming to work. I don't really want to be a head coach. Like, is it possible that he just likes coming to work and likes his role?
I think it's unlikely, because I think most of those guys get to that point. And most people, I would guess, end up learning that this is their lot in life. They do not decide, you know, like it feels like there are guys who never get that look. And they're like, oh, I'm a position coach or I'm a coordinator. I mean, I've made the argument plenty of times, though, that the way that we go about hiring head coaches is based on them being successful at a job that has very little to do with the job that they're eventually going to do. So I would love that if we ever got to a place where the coordinators got paid as much as they deserve. In the same way, you're on a roster where a quarterback's going to get paid more than a tackle who may be better than him, but they just are more valuable. So that's a future that we won't get to. But I think being comfortable where you are is incredibly valuable, and his value isn't going to go down necessarily anytime soon. But also, it's such an interconnected game. I guess I'm contradicting myself. Is such an interdependent game that your value can go down. Things can change.
Can go down.
And his value is incredibly high, but he also had the misfortune of being a free agent coach, or being a coveted coach and having maybe his best year as a coordinator, the same year where this may have been the most attractive head coaching market that we've seen in the
history
of
football.
But
he got the jobs over Vrabel and Belichick. He got the options over those guys.
I mean, we don't know how this process went. We're not sure how exactly it went. But, I mean, he got a job.
At least one offer. More offer than them.
Well, he didn't get the offer ahead of the general manager, which I think is the key thing in this conversation, is being able to control as much of the building as you can and get as much power as you can.
Can I ask one Lions-specific thing? Does Ben Johnson staying tangibly change how you think about this team moving forward?
Yes, because it removes the doubt, the biggest doubt, which, remember, under Anthony Lynn, with the play calls, this was a bad team. And I don't think it's all due to the Ben Johnson, but I think there's some maturity on the roster. I think Penei Sewell's development has been really special when you consider, like, he shut out Nick Bosa the other day. Even though Nick Bosa had eight pressures on the day, he literally shut him out. Jared Goff getting more comfortable. The middle of the field stuff was obvious. Also, like, it is funny, like, just tell the next coordinator to just use the middle of the field and things will be fine. I do think there's some of that, but it removes, replacing coordinators is the most overlooked thing. We all thought it was going to be so easy in Philadelphia, and it wasn't. And I think that we always just say, all right, well, they'll figure it out. Like, the only person who can just kind of remove folks and move on was Bill Belichick, and a little bit of Andy Reid, certainly on the offensive side. But even Andy Reid needed to give Spagnuolo. Like, coordinators are extremely important, and so the fact they don't have to go fishing for a new one is massive in the NFC North.
Yeah, I'm sure it helps when you have Tom Brady, who is effectively the coordinator, and Bill Belichick is effectively the defensive coordinator. You keep that type of continuity there. It's not as much change. Their roster is an interesting one going forward because the strength of their team was their offensive line. And a lot of those guys are going to be available coming up. Go ahead, Charlie. What do you got?
Well, yeah, they're going to be available. But also, there have been rumors already that they're going to make Jared Goff one of the highest paid players in the NFL this offseason. They're going to have to pay Sewell. They're going to have to pay Hutchinson. And they're going to have to pay Amon-Ra all within the next 2 years. And we talked about the quick build. But sustaining that quick build and continuing to get better and build around Goff, I think, is really interesting of how they build that roster.
You wouldn't pay Jared Goff. Please expound.
I wouldn't pay Jared Goff one of the biggest salaries in the NFL. I understand that that's the market rate for a quarterback who makes the NFC Championship game, but I would not. The market rate now for a top quarterback, as you're saying, is like $50 million a year. That's too much for Jared Goff.
So this is an interesting question. Let's do a hypothetical conversation. Jared Goff won't accept anything less. So you play this year out with Jared Goff and then go into the franchise wars, or which then also inhibits your ability to build your team because the cap hit is larger than you would like it to be, unless you give him a long-term contract. So, like, I guess what it comes down to me in this conversation that we have this often, and I'm normally more cautious. I'm like, hey, you got a guy that you like, you pay him what it costs to pay him. So would you have it in you to go ahead and experience life post golf in the Hendon Hooker future or someone else?
I don't think Hendon Hooker is the guy. I think that. So first of all, like, Brad Holmes came from Los Angeles.
Yes.
And what happened in Los Angeles? The cap was fake and they just went all in all the time. I would not. There's a proof of concept of being able to balance a lot of superstar salaries. And even, like, everybody said the Bills were going to come due and the Rams were awesome this year. So, like, Kevin Dumoff, the team president, wrote a letter being like, uh-oh, lean times. And it was like, ah, whatever. We'll just make the playoffs again and be a sleeper Super Bowl contender. And so I trust them all to make this work. I am so impressed with everybody in Detroit. I unfortunately would probably play hardball with Jared Goff.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, I guess the two things that you said, while they did set the table for the conversation, they're inconsistent with what you were saying. Is like, first you're saying you don't pay Jared Goff. Then you say that it's possible to pay everybody and ignore the cap.
If anybody can make it work, it's someone from the Rams lineage who understands what that looks like. But I would play hardball with Jared Goff. I would be comfortable with the franchise stuff. I mean, obviously you mentioned two things that does. It hurts cap flexibility and it hurts you can't use a franchise tag on anybody else, which is a problem when you have a bunch of young stars. As you mentioned, Hutchinson, Sewell, those guys are going to be up for contracts in a few years. So I understand that.
Not only can you not use the tag on them, you can't use the leverage that it gives you in negotiations.
Right. The salary cap, the franchise tag is the biggest influencing factor in for contracts in sports history.
So I do have just on Goff qualitatively. I think we can all agree that he's gotten better. It can't just be Ben Johnson because we thought it was just Sean McVay. He has to be an improving quarterback. Is there a point where his success would make it so you're like, yeah, pay that guy? Or do you think that Jared Goff and guys of his ilk, the mid-level starters, high, like low-tier franchise guys, are those people that you in general are opposed paying?
Yeah, I pay him. Like, we've had this conversation before. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that anybody in my position on that is I pay him as soon as possible. Once I know that they're the guy, I just don't have the faith that you're going to find someone else. And I would try my best to figure out elsewhere.
So he made $25 million in cash this year. The issue is, in the NFL, there's no system set up for what I would call middle class star quarterback. And this happens all the time. When the market becomes mature on a position, there's a huge gap in salary. Like, I remember 2016 or 2017, the year Ryan Fitzpatrick came back with the Jets and he signed that contract. And there was something wild where, like, he was the only quarterback making between like $7 and $20 million. Like, there weren't the $11 million quarterback didn't exist. Now is like $26, $27, $28 million. There's no real version of that being signed now. That contract boom where it was like Derek Carr was the highest paid, the Matthew Stafford, that whole wave reset that market. And now the Burrow and Herberts of the world, who are significantly better quarterbacks, are resetting the market there. Mahomes will get more money if he hasn't already. you know, the Watson contract did its own thing. So I think you need to start saying, okay, we're comfortable giving you a bunch of money, but it's looking more like 38 than it is 48.
I mean,
right. I mean that to me, okay. We'll get bogged down on this because that to me just seems. I mean, that to me seems like wishful thinking. You can try it, by all means, go right ahead and try it. But and then you're going to end up franchising him, and that reduces your flexibility, and inevitably getting to the point where he leaves. Which Washington is the last team that tried to play hardball with their like mid-tier quarterback, and he went to Minnesota.
So a couple things. One, I think that. I'm with Kevin that paying someone who's like a mid-tier quarterback top-tier money is something that can be like incredibly handicapping of the ceiling of your team. Even the Washington Kirk Cousins thing, it's like, yeah, you know, pat yourself on the back because you had a ceiling of being 10-6 every year, but that's about it. You don't have the guy who can elevate your team. But also, if they didn't view Jared Goff this way, which apparently they do because they're going to pay him, they blew a golden opportunity. They could have drafted Anthony Richardson and sat him for a year behind Jared Goff, and that's someone who we've only seen play 2.5 games, but look pretty good in those. And that would have been something where you have the guy in the rookie contract. You have it lining up with the fact that you're going to have to pay your stars. And you have someone who, in theory, is a massive ceiling raiser.
Yeah, that's fine. So the goal is to win a championship. If you have, there are ways to win a championship with one of these mid-tier quarterbacks. There is not a way to win a championship with a bad quarterback. Finding a mid-tier quarterback is difficult. Finding a superstar quarterback that you think warrants the money is almost impossible. This is where we get where the conversation gets confusing to me, because I agree with you. I would pay as little as I possibly could for a great player. But if they're going to hold firm and require the payment, you guys are advocating for playing a lottery in a way, because, okay, you get a mid-tier quarterback, you have to pay him too much money, or what you think is too much money. Then it is incumbent on you as Brad Holmes and his staff to draft really well and have success, like high value, low price success at other positions. If you let him leave and you end up with a bad quarterback, there is not a way to win a championship. There is no draft that you can execute. There is no player acquisition process that you can execute that will be good enough for you to win a championship. So if the goal is to win a championship, you either need a great guy or you need a good guy. Letting good guys walk out the door and hoping you find another good guy for a lower price to me seems like an unlikely strategy for success.
What would you do with Tua Tagovailoa?
I mean, this is the same conversation. I got a quarterback.
That's what I'm saying.
I pay my quarterbacks.
Here's what you do. If I'm a GM of these teams, I bring my coach in, I bring my play caller in Miami, the same spot. I close the door. I get all the recording devices out of the room. And I say, how many guys can you do this with?
Okay.
Yeah. How many guys can you do this with? And if the answer is I can do it with, with Drew Lock. And obviously I'm being facetious here, but like, if that's the answer, then that's your answer. If Mike McDaniel says Tua Tagovailoa, or if Ben Johnson says Jared Goff is a savant at running my offense, you pay him top of the market. If he says anything else, you start the scale sliding from there.
No, I'm with you. But the question is, what's the actual answer? Not the answer they're going to give you, the actual answer. We don't see it happening a bunch of times in the league. Like, it's not a thing. We have one coordinator, and that man's name is Kyle Shanahan, who we've seen be able to elevate bad quarterbacks to at least mediocre and mediocre quarterbacks to good, and take great quarterbacks and also make them good. That is Kyle Shanahan. That is what he is capable of doing. I have not seen it duplicated elsewhere. If you think that it can, and maybe you're saying that Mike McDaniel is that version, but he doesn't have the track record to prove it. So go ahead. By all means, take an opportunity or take this chance with your own career based on the opinion of someone whose ego is enormous and thinks they can do it all over and over again and believes that it's not the quarterback, it's them. Y'all all getting your fired.
Dominique, I got to ask you one question. Because I'm looking at the quarterbacks who have won the Super Bowl for the last 10 years. You said it's possible to win with the mid-tier quarterback. And it's Patrick Mahomes, Matthew Stafford, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Nick Foles being the outlier because he got to play against Matt Patricia, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson. You really can't win without a good quarterback.
And we can talk about all of those quarterback runs and how they got there. We can talk about the teams that they went against.
Hall of Fame careers.
Were they... Okay, are we going to do this? Are we going to have the dumbed down version of the conversation where you included that version of Peyton Manning in this conversation? That man was a liability. So stop it. And like the teams that had an opportunity to compete on the other side matter too. Like they weren't completely dominated. You can win a Super Bowl that way. The last Super Bowl that Tom Brady won, he was okay. That playoff run, he was mediocre. Like, let's be serious. They did not win because Tom Brady was Hall of Fame version of Tom Brady. The same is true of Russell Wilson. They won because that team was incredible around them. So we can be honest about this conversation and say that. And then we also have to consider that the teams on the other side, like San Francisco, they could have won with Jimmy Garoppolo. They were very close. I'm saying that it is a reasonable thing to say that you can get a Super Bowl championship with these. Huh?
Which they didn't because of him.
Oh, gosh.
He overthrew the guy in the fourth quarter.
Kevin, are we? I'm okay, Charlie. That's what we're doing. No, you guys both. So
this is my belief structure. I think you need a good quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
If you genuinely believe that you cannot win a Super Bowl
No, you can't, because the Peyton Manning team or the Russell Wilson team are historically great defenses. You're right. If you hit the lottery and you have a historically great defense that can completely take over a game, that can change what you need from the quarterback position. I can stop trolling on that. That's a fact.
Yeah, so that's my only point is, yes, we all would rather have Patrick Mahomes or a quarterback close to that level. You're not finding him. Like, that's just not a reasonable strategy. That's a reasonable strategy if you plan to own the team for 50 years, because maybe you'll come across one at some point. If you want to keep your job as a head coach or general manager, you're wasting your damn time. Do the best with what you got, pay him, and structure an offense around what he does well.
Mm-hmm. A different strategy is to ask for $15 million a year to be head coach, get it, and then it doesn't matter if you get fired.
Well, I think that some of these people actually also want to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
By the way, worth noting that the Lions do not have an all historically great defense like those other teams did. So that really changes the calculus on the. I do want to ask you.
That's why you go for it on fourth down. Yeah, exactly. Put it away.
Yeah. I do want to ask you.
Yeah, I yelled at people all morning on Get Up about that. But anyway, go ahead.
About the division, really quick. Where do you? Okay. This was a very fortunate year for the Lions in the NFC North, not because they weren't the best team, but because it took the Packers and Jordan Love however many weeks to start getting rolling, and then he looked like a world-beater quarterback by the end of the season, minus that last pass. The Bears were doing a really interesting rebuild process, teardown type of thing, where they have picks, and they're a year away from having Caleb Williams, and Justin Fields was hurt, and they weren't that competitive, and Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles. Where do you think the Lions fall in the NFC North pecking order next year? Still at the top?
No. I mean, not clearly at the top. I think we'll have to see what happens in the free agency and what happens in the draft. If they get, I think right now they're mocked to get my man Cooper DeJean, other side of the corner. If they get Coop, then we're looking at maybe a Super Bowl championship. But short of Coop, I think they're in some trouble. Yeah, I think this division is going to be competitive. So it's not going to be the runaway that it felt like for much of this season, especially the way Jordan Love elevated and the way that the Bears improved towards the end of the season, even before they added the potential of Caleb.
So first of all, Dan Campbell was correct in saying we might never get back here, because the biggest cope of all time is, hey, this team's young, they'll be back. The football graveyard is full of teams that had one shot and they didn't get back there. And you think about the NFC, the NFC's only going to get better. The team with the fewest, I'd say, questions about their trajectory is Green Bay, because they're extremely young. Mm-hmm. They have the quarterback. Like Minnesota, who's even going to play quarterback for them next year? I love Kevin O'Connell, but I just don't know what's going to happen. And if it is Kirk Cousins, how is he recovering from injury? What does that look like? What does their roster look like? They've missed on a couple of they've not had vintage draft classes the last few years. And then the Bears is Bears, as we say in football. And so it's those three teams are intriguing to me. If I had to handicap it right now, as Dominic said, let's see with the draft, let's see for the free agency, I'd go Packers winning close in that division. I'm talking like week 18 and then the Lions being a wild card.
Yeah, I feel the same way about that. And it's also like largely predicated on that quarterback position, which matters a little bit.
Huh.
Which is weird, huh? No, it's nice very weird. It's very talent, weird how
not a mediocre one that you're paying on, a high mid-level starter that you're paying all the money in the world.
So you're back to trolling, huh?
That's not trolling. I'm just saying.
You didn't jump on Kevin when he seemed to say that he loves Kevin O'Connell, but it really matters who's going to be playing quarterback for them, after saying that your coordinator might be able to do it with a bunch of other players. Okay.
No, Jordan Love's cap hit next year is $12 million. So he's a there's a middle class quarterback for him.
Yeah, I think
they're
going to
extend him pretty soon too.
I really think this Dak Goff conversation was a proxy for Dak, but I digress. We'll move on.
No, Dak is so much better than Jared Goff.
Yeah, he is. It's not a proxy for any conversation. It's a general conversation about how to win a championship, and you guys want to roll the dice in a way that you wouldn't actually do if you had to sit in a room and make these decisions. It's dishonest by both of you.
When people see the Dak contract numbers, the final numbers, because he couldn't reach true free agency, the morning shows on ESPN, Dominique is going to have to work. They're going to have to be working in shifts. They're going to have to do 8 hours at a time when the Dak contract actually finally rolls in.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Should we talk about the Ravens real quick? Sure. Let's go to the Ravens. Okay. I think we can agree that this was a disappointing outcome for a team that I still think was the best team in the NFL this year.
Jesus Christ.
I really do. And they have an MVP. They have an MVP quarterback. They had awesome coordinators. They have awesome coaching. Let's start with the quarterback on this one, the quarterback in the roster. Cause the Ravens brought in Todd Monken. They've used a ton of draft capital on pass catchers with Zay Flowers, Bateman, Andrews. Likely. It seems like their strategy, which was effective for most of the season, was to bring in skill players to elevate the passing game. And Lamar's superpower has always been to elevate the running game. That went out the window in the game against the Chiefs, where they were playing from behind and they felt like they were pressing. So is there something you would change about this Ravens roster or offense moving forward? Or how do you expect it to look next year as they reinvest in different positions or the guys they have?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely wouldn't change anything about that unless, to take a page out of the Belichick book, unless there is an opportunity, unless there is something available to change. Like, that's the good thing about this team. It's a really well-built team that you always want to be able to take draft from a position of or draft the best available, not from position of need. And offensively, they don't seem to be in any dire need. I know the guards could be end up being replaced. But the real question for me is what they're going to do on the other side of the ball. I don't think they're going to bring back Queen. They might bring back Matabike, but those seem like more impactful things, because part of the reason why Lamar was MVP and Lamar is so special is I think there's a floor of the offense that you're not going to fall below as long as Lamar is your quarterback. How high the ceiling is may be determined by the other things that you add, but it does often feel like I think Zay was kind of special, but the offense goes as he goes. Like, it's not a whole bunch of like getting it to somebody else. It's not a lot of screen passes that let him work. It's Lamar making the difference in decision making.
Yeah, so there's a couple questions about the roster. Also, the coordinator thing. Does Mike McDonald come back? He was so influential in everything that they did. Is Todd Monken going to have a sensical game plan next year? Like, that was it. Lamar was bad. Todd Monken was worse. And that was the frustrating thing, is that they've got 8 months to just be like, was it the talent? Was it a talent gap? Was it Lamar being worse than Mahomes? Or was it six carries to running backs? Was it no quick game stuff when against Houston, they thrived against that, against the blitz? If I were to do a blame pie right now, Monken would be number one, Lamar would be number two. And so that's a frustrating thing to me, is the roster was good, the defense was good, the coordinators were good. It's not like Mahomes put up 50 here, or even 30. This was about their game plan. And it felt to me, maybe I'm reading too much into it, it felt like on Sunday they were trying to set up a Lamar masterclass instead of just scoring 20 points. Like, it felt to me like they were trying to have a historic game. And I said that on TV the other day, and people were saying that it felt like the Ravens tried to do that a couple times, where it was like, all right, we've got this great plan for Lamar. Well, it wasn't working, so let's do something else. And they didn't have a second pitch. And that was so frustrating about the season. I think Ravens fans will feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think that could have been part of it, but also it just felt like there were plays there to be made that Lamar had trouble making. Also, like, there were open receivers that he missed. There were times when, and this has been a issue with Lamar's entire career, to me at least, even back to Louisville, were times where you just want him to tuck and run, and he's never been that type of guy. But when they're running these slow developing deep routes, and the zone droppers are getting a bunch of depth, just like, go ahead and get 8 quick yards and slide down, or 5 yards and slide down, and force them underneath coverage to address it, and that opens the deep windows, because with the super tight windows, like, that's not Lamar's strength. It's not going to be Drew Brees level accuracy.
Yep, I agree. Like, Mahomes is a far more decisive runner, and that makes a huge difference on a drive-to-drive basis.
Yeah, but we're not going to litigate that debacle.
I mean, we can. But no, I do want to ask you about that.
Sounds like we just did.
Yeah, I want to ask you about, we mentioned briefly McDonald. If McDonald leaves, do you think the defense will take a big step back? Because this defense was really, really, really good this year.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. I think it's likely to assume that replacing the coordinator won't be easy, but I think it's also the talent that we mentioned it's going to be leaving that's going to be hard to replace. I think Clowney is up too. Like, there's a significant portion of this defense. I think the Queen and Smith combo is that, being the end of that is going to be a challenge. I think that's one of the things that had them so successful against all these Shanahan disciple schemes, is that they had two linebackers and a safety that you could not exploit in the middle of the field. When you go down to one linebacker and a safety that you can't exploit in the middle of the field, it's going to be a challenge, I think, for them to continue to play this well. And so the coach leaving is going to matter if he does leave, but also the players.
Hey, Foxworth, I have a question.
Yes, Clark.
Having been a defensive backs coach, what is the level of involvement with John Harbaugh on that defense?
I wasn't the coach. I played, but the level...
No. John Harbaugh was a defensive backs coach.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got you.
And... I wasn't accusing you of having been the Ravens defensive backs coach. Harbaugh was a DB coach before he got to the Ravens.
He was a special teams coach. But he was a DB coach.
I know,
then
he
that.
Was a DB's right, coach. Yeah. He was also a defensive backs coach
right.
in college.
So he was not super involved. He'd come in our meeting room sometimes, and he didn't seem to particularly, and maybe things have changed, but he didn't seem to have the depth of understanding of the scheme that you would have expected from someone like
Ed Reed, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, doing great, boys.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just remember clearly us talking about our cover four rules, and he would come in and he felt differently about the cover four rules than the rules that we had been coached up until that point. So, and he wasn't super involved. He just came in every now and then. He wasn't heavily involved in that part of the game plan, but that's probably changed. That was his second and third year as a coach, and he's been through a few coordinators since then. I think he's probably become more involved, I would guess, in the game planning than in the day-to-day operations than he was then. Maybe. I don't know. I'll ask somebody and then get back to you. My buddy Denard Wilson is coach there now. He was safety on my college team. I'll ask him.
He's interviewing places.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of love. I hope he gets a job.
Last thing on the Ravens. Let's talk division. Like the Lions, this division worked out very fortuitously for the Ravens this year. Joe Burrow was out for most of the season. Deshaun Watson was out for most of the season, and they, you know, that Browns defense, which was excellent, couldn't be carried by PJ Walker and DTR until it was too late. And they brought in Flacco, turned into a pumpkin, and then Pittsburgh was fraudulent. Where do you see the Ravens in the AFC North next season?
Yeah, I don't think their division is nearly as formidable as the Lions' division is for the Lions going forward. The Bengals, obviously getting Joe Burrow back, but a fully healthy Joe Burrow is something we've never completely seen. So that's not something we can completely guarantee. And they have roster construction issues that they're not easy answers for right now. The Steelers still don't have a quarterback, and the Browns still can't get right. So like any one of these teams could potentially rise up and become a problem for the Ravens, but I still see them as a cut above everyone in their division.
As long as Cincinnati is able to bring back T. Higgins and Joe Burrow is healthy, they're going to be really good. And we have seen him fully healthy. He made the Super Bowl and almost won the Super Bowl. And I think Lou Anarumo staying is massive. He didn't really, like we were talking earlier about guys who just lose the hype. Where was the Lou Anarumo hype? There was so much last year. I thought he was going to get the Arizona job and then just nothing this year. He's really good. He wins a lot. They win a lot of games they shouldn't on defense. So I think that's the biggest threat. I mean, the problem is that with this question is like you said that the NFC North is more formidable than this is for the Ravens because the Ravens are a better team than the Lions. Right. So like, it's going to be easier for them to fend off, you know, yeah. Deshaun Watson led Cleveland or Arthur Smith and the OC improving the Steelers. Like they're good, buddy. The only real threat they have is if Burrow is fully healthy, if T. Higgins comes back in the franchise tag and the Bengals relate themselves. That's a legit threat, but there's a lot of ifs in that scenario.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you on all those points, but I still think they're better. Like I the Bengals could beat them, but if we look at the roster top to bottom and including the coaching staff, I think the Ravens are like actually better, whereas I don't know that that's true for the Lions in their division. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I'm getting tired of being right. Let's talk about basketball. Maybe I'll be wrong about that, Charlie.
Oh, baby.
Oh, you ready to talk about? Okay, that's great. Before I give any Bengals takes, it'll just piss off Ravens fans. Guys, let's talk about Joel Embiid.
Sure.
Dominique's guy, Joel Embiid. The MVP from last year. The guy who can go out and score 70. The guy who campaigned for the MVP and said this year he doesn't care about the MVP. The guy who was afraid to play against Nikola Jokic in Denver because he didn't want Jokic to put it on his head. He is probably not going to play 65 games this year, which is the minimum that is needed in theory to win the MVP. But you can basically apply for an exemption, get voted for. Do you think that Joel Embiid should be considered for the MVP if he plays fewer than 65 games this year, knowing that he's averaging 36, 12, and 6?
Absolutely think he should be considered, but I disagree with you. I don't think that in the first year of this 65-game rule that they're going to make an exemption. None of the voters will. I don't think the league will. Not in the first year. That sets the entirely wrong precedent, is that this rule that they're trying to use to encourage guys to play more doesn't matter at all. So, like, as impressive as Joel Embiid is, and I also think that he's being honest about him saying that he doesn't care because he's at this stage and is what? Why does that make you roll your head? Like, I think he probably did care last year, and I'm sure he would accept it if they gave it to him. But he's at this stage in his career. and it's the same for quarterbacks and superstar NBA players, that the perception of you cannot improve until you win a championship. And Joel Embiid knows that, that he could win another MVP, and that's only going to make the criticism fall heavier on his head. He has to do it in June is what it comes down to for him and for a lot of stars that have gotten to that level.
Fox, we're talking about Embiid, not the Ravens and Lamar.
Yeah.
Same thing. You didn't see the memes? You didn't see the memes over the weekend? It's the same thing. Go ahead and throw Dak in that conversation too. It's all the same thing. They're all experiencing the exact same.
No. Don't stop putting Dak in conversations. He doesn't belong.
I did. You put him in earlier.
These guys are really good at their sport.
Hey, so I have an idea for this. So the functional problem is that people are spending lots of money. Kids are flying from like Australia. We've all seen like the signs where it's like, I flew from Australia to see Jimmy Butler, and then Jimmy Butler doesn't play, right? So I think it should be like, you know how you can get out like your insurance, you get a speeding ticket, but your insurance won't go up if as long as you take you like do certain things, right? You should be able to get back games towards MVP if you do a 30-minute autograph session for kids on the concourse when you opt out. So like in Denver on Saturday, like the Denver Post wrote a story about how this like big Embiid fan was like crying after the game or whatever. Like there should be like a little area, and if you're a kid, you go and you like meet LeBron for 20 minutes and then you get your games back. And it just solves everybody's problem. What would you rather do? See Anthony Davis play if you're like the biggest Anthony Davis fan in the world, or like get a selfie with him to put it on Snapchat?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'd rather see him play, but I don't want Snapchat selfies. But I mean, this to me, you're doing the same thing that the league does, is you're trying to solve the problem without actually addressing the problem, when the problem is that y'all got too many games. Like, that's the problem. No matter what you try to do, whether you put an in-season tournament or you try to legislate the players to play more, the problem is the games don't matter. Like, some of them don't matter. It's the fundamental issue with this is, and we add to it with the way that we talk about these guys. What? That's the fundamental concern.
That's the fundamental concern, but Embiid's taken it to another level. He's played 3 road games against teams above 500 this season. He's only playing at home or easy road games. And, like, to reward that is like, ridiculous.
Wait, are you saying he's the Floyd Mayweather of the NBA?
I don't even
he only fights when it's advantageous for him.
I don't even know what the Embiid comp is, because he didn't deserve the MVP that he won last year, and it was like a very bizarre thing. And this year he's having the best season in the NBA this year. This is the first time he sort of deserves the MVP, but to disregard, like you said, Dominique, to disregard the rule that they put in place this year because the guy's having a historically great season, when we know
I don't think they will.
Yeah, but we also know, like, we know that the NBA MVP award is much more sacred than it is other sports. It's sort of a representation of the best guy. And we sort of know after last year in the postseason that even with these numbers, Embiid's not the best guy. And so just,
if
like,
if this is an Embiid problem, then we can't solve it by any sort of rules that you're talking about. If it's a league-wide problem, I think the problem is in the ownership's greed, not in, and I guess the players' greed too, because it impacts the salary cap, how much revenue they make. And we decided to stop pretending like there's some artful solution to a problem that is about the value of the games. That's what it comes down to. Like, if we are going to say that the games in the playoffs are hugely valuable and all these games leading up to the playoffs are less valuable and get less and less valuable as home field advantage seems irrelevant, then we can't be surprised when guys respond rationally to that incentive structure. And there's not going to be a way. I mean, I guess you could change the financial compensation drastically, but the players aren't going to agree to that. It's hard to change the incentive structure when it's so obviously ingrained.
Beyond the incentive structure, Dominique, like, can you imagine if, like, I guess it's different because there are fewer games in the NFL, but just from like a competitive nature, if like Ed Reed was like, I don't want to play against Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in a given year.
Yeah, and Embiid didn't say that. You're implying this based on
he implied that. Yeah, he by didn't, not being on the injury report.
That's fine. No,
I get that there are specificities you can talk around, but don't you think it's just like incredibly lame the way that this has come out? Like,
I am
continued
with you.
To happen.
I'm with you. But I guess where we're different is I have a hard time blaming someone who is acting rationally, given the way that the things are constructed, and not saying that the system itself is broken. Like, that to me seems like we're blaming the symptoms for the overall situation. And maybe some players, and I think you're right, some players would ignore all of that and go out and play every game and do all these things. Those are the guys you want. However,
it's not just every game. It's like playing against Jokic. He'll only play against Jokic at home. He hasn't played in Denver since 2019.
But this to me sounds like you got an issue with Embiid. So stop trying to make it about the MVP. I know,
I think Charlie will tell you that.
Yeah, Embiid, Harden, these guys who sort of are like regular season compilers for the award, when it's like, that's not what this should be.
Okay, well, fight him then, Charlie. I don't know how to fix the problem then. Like, what do you want me to do, man? Yeah, I got your back, Charlie. I would not let them jump you. I would scream really loud for some help. Anyway, thank you, Charlie, for being here to push my buttons and make me angry. That's a very valuable skill that you have. And Kevin, thanks for dropping names. I appreciate you. Thanks, Podville, for letting us use the studio. And appreciate all our producers, Megan Serafina, Brian, Kevin, and Cortez. We're out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.